May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Thank you. I won't say please be seated because for the first case this morning, we do not have anybody else in the courtroom. But thank you for joining us. Welcome to the September session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is Frankie Moore, and I am from North Platte, and I'm pleased to be joined on the bench by Judge Larry Welch from Plattsmouth. We also have Judge Rico Bishop via WebEx. Good morning, Judge. And we also have, for the first case this morning, both attorneys joining us by WebEx video conferencing. We do very much appreciate everyone following our COVID protocols, and we appreciate your attendance by WebEx this morning. And before we begin, if I could please have the attorneys introduce themselves and confirm that you can see and hear everyone here this morning. So, appellant's counsel.
Good morning. My name is Lindsay Moran Bryant. On behalf of the appellant, I can hear all of you thus far.
Great. Thank you.
And I am Avis Andrews, the attorney for the appellee, and I can also see and hear fine.
Thank you very much. Our first case this morning is stayed on behalf of Emery W. versus Michael W., and we will proceed. I trust both counsel can also see the timing clock on your screen.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bryant. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Good morning to the panel. May it please the court. Again, my name is Lindsay Moran Bryant on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Walker. Hopefully you all can understand me. If you don't, please wave and stop me. And unless the court has any questions about the facts, I'd like to just jump right into the assignments of error, if that would please the panel at this time.
That's just fine.
Thank you. The first assignment of error that Mr. Walker asserts is regarding the trial court's order of custody of the children. There's two children in this matter, and the trial court awarded Mr. Walker parenting time with those children every other Tuesday at 6 p.m. to Sunday at 6 p.m. and on alternating weeks from Tuesdays at 6 p.m. to Thursday at 6 p.m. But then the court ordered that Ms. Buckingham, the mother, be granted sole physical custody of the children. Mr. Walker is asserting that this is an abuse of discretion because essentially that order of the court and the parenting time gives him 7 out of 14 overnights in a 2-week period. And in looking at the 2020 calendar, it equates to 183 overnights. And that doesn't account for holidays, which I believe are evenly divided between the parties. So in looking at the Nebraska Parenting Act, specifically 43-29-22 and subsection 12, which defines joint physical custody, it's the mutual authority and responsibility of parents regarding the children's primary residence and the exertion of continuous blocks of time over significant periods of time. In this case, the time that was ordered for Mr. Walker essentially meets that definition of joint custody. And what we're here arguing is essentially the label that's been given. The Supreme Court has stated on several occasions that labels make little difference, and the provisions of the decree and the parenting plan are what provide the rights and responsibilities, such that the trial court's allocation of the parenting time is what drives the physical custody label. And if that allocation and evidence before the court establishes a joint physical custody arrangement, then the courts will so construe it.
Excuse me.
Yes.
So we know that you've relied pretty heavily on the Caden S. case.
Yes.
Which talks about it's what the actual days are versus the label. In that case, though, it was alternating week periods. Do you think that makes a difference in our analysis where we don't have a week on, week off situation?
I do, and I believe I sort of touched that on my brief, because if you're looking at continuous, the exertion of continuous blocks of time, when it's not week on, week off, clearly that's not a continuous block of time. But what I think that still provides that this case would fall under that distinction versus maybe a typical sole physical custody with liberal parenting time is that they are in blocks of time. So it's Tuesday to Sunday, which is the majority of a week. And then the majority, the Tuesday to Thursday of the alternating weeks. So I do recognize that it is different than that Caden case, the week on, week off, but I still think that those blocks would suffice to show that this is a more of a joint custody arrangement, Your Honor.
Then the question I have relates to court's comments from the bench about it. You're not quite for joint custody. To me, that indicates an intention not to have joint custody at this point. So, how do we resolve the court's intention by its remaining on the bench?
I believe that it would be resolved by just looking at how much time Mr. Walker has with the children. I'm not sure that there's a springing provision in any of the order or the parenting plan, which shows now we're appropriate for being at that time. And I know that's not a hard and fast case law for the court to rely upon, but I do believe that the amount of time that he has given Mr. Walker with the children indicate that the record did provide that that was appropriate and in the best interest of the children that they spend that much time with him. So I don't know how that is reconciled with what the judge said from the bench to what the order says, Your Honor. But it seems to me that the court felt that the best interests of the children were to allow him to have a significant amount of time with those children.
And so would it be possible that the judge thought that it had to be a 7 week or 7 day alternating 7 days instead of this 5-2-2-5? But like you said, that really doesn't matter if the number of times are equally divided between the parties. It still constitutes physical custody, even if in the judge's mind, it needed to be a 7-7 schedule.
I do think that's a possibility, Your Honor, because if you look at the cases, so I relied heavily on the Caden case, but also there's Betcher v. Betcher, and I'm butchering that last name, but that's 299-NEB-206, a 2018 case. Elsom v. Elsom, 257-NEB-889, a 1999 case. And I believe also Court of Appeals case, Hill v. Hill, and that was 20-NEB-5D-NEB-528. From 2013. I believe that those cases all dealt with a week on, week off schedule. So I'm not sure that the court has seen any schedule like what we have here. Any other questions?
Also, jumping to the monetary issues, and I trust your joint child support argument follows your joint custody argument in some ways in terms of the number of days. But I want to ask you about the cash medical support. I didn't find anything in the record that talked about that, other than comments by counsel at the beginning of trial that there's no health insurance involved. So would you agree we don't have anything in our record that tells us what that cash medical support was for?
I agree, and that's kind of a tricky assignment of error, I think, because in the final order, there's no order to continue cash medical payment, which was ordered in the temporary order. The temporary order, the parties didn't have health insurance available, whereas, but the time of trial, Ms. Buckingham, the mother, did. But the order of the court also doesn't terminate the temporary cash medical support. So according to the district court, it continues to accrue.
Well, isn't that because there was, in the February 2018 order, a cash medical support order that pre-existed? So the temporary order superseded that temporarily, but when the judge didn't address it in this final order now, it left intact that February 2018 medical cash payment.
Yes, I believe that's... Yeah, and so yes, regarding the cash medical support. So in looking at 42.369 and then the child support guidelines at 4-215, it provides that cash medical support is appropriate in the Title 9D cases where the children were receiving state aid. But I believe that the record of what little we have for cash medical is that the children now are covered by private health insurance through employment. And so the cash medical would not be necessary under the guidelines or the statute. And also looking further into the guidelines, there is a section which is 4-215 and it's C(i) or 1 that provides that court-ordered cash medical support is in lieu of, not addition to, requiring a parent to pay reimbursement for reasonable and necessary healthcare costs. And Mr. Walker and Ms. Buckingham were ordered to pay those equally. So I don't believe any of the triggers are there anymore for cash medical support. And the child support calculation that was provided at trial doesn't provide any allocation of cash medical support. And Ms. Buckingham, the mother, does get the deduction for the private health insurance premium.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May I reserve any time?
You may.
Thank you.
Ms. Andrews.
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Ms. Lindsay Moran Bryant. It is our position that physical custody is more than just counting days. And even by definition, in the Parenting Act that defines joint physical custody as meaning mutual authority and responsibility of the parents regarding the child's place of residence, indicates that this is a situation where the court found that that definition did not apply. As far as mutual authority goes, the mother is allowed the tiebreaker under the joint legal custody, which would necessarily affect a child's living place because of such things as school, daycare, medical treatment, things like that. Also, the definition indicates that joint physical custody means responsibility of the parents regarding the child's place of residence. I think in this case, the evidence showed that really it was the father's parents who were providing basically everything for the child as well as for the father, place to live, food, daycare, pretty much everything, and that he did not have the responsibility regarding the child's place of residence. True, the mother also lived with her parents, but the evidence indicated that she was contributing rent as well as food and care of the children, and that her responsibility in regard to the child's place of residence was much more active and assertive than the father's role.
Let me ask you a specific question. Would you agree that the court's order does allow each parent to expend continuous blocks of parenting time for significant periods of time? Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that there are continuous blocks of parenting time, of course. For significant periods of time, I suppose going forward, yes. But looking backwards, the mother had the temporary physical custody of the children, and the evidence indicated that she had been their caretaker since the birth of each of them. So I think that goes back to looking at the mutual authority and responsibility, that the mother really has been the one to care for these children over those continuous blocks of time and for the significant periods of time.
But going forward, they're basically equal time between the parents. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that under this, the parenting plan adopted by the court, if you're just counting days and not looking at anything else, then yes, they have approximately the same amount of days and overnights with the children.
And during the father's time with the child, he will be determining the residence and providing care and all of the things a custodial parent does. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that the parenting plan indicates that both parents are able to make decisions on a day-to-day basis, but that the overall, when there is a dispute or especially in the more significant things that affect the children, it is the mother that has the tiebreaker and she is the one that's going to make those decisions. I'd also argue that the law is clear that the overriding concern is the best interest of the children. And it is our position that the order adopted by the district court takes into account the best interests of the children.
Ms. Andrews?
Yes?
Why, what is the downside here? I mean, if the children are, if the father's been awarded equal time, and it's clearly very, it's equal time with the mother, what is the downside to calling this physical custody or joint physical custody?
Yes, I would say one of them is clearly financial, because the evidence indicated that the mother had access and was making use of Medicaid and WIC, that she had intentions of looking into Title 20 for daycare, that there were grants and scholarships for education for the children. I think that physical custody, especially with the father living in a different county and a different city, would impact all of those. So I do believe that there is a significance to keeping it with the physical custody for the mother, just on a financial.
Didn't the father indicate he would be moving to the same community, and so that would become a non-issue? And I realize that was one of the judge's concerns, that that hadn't happened yet. But to the extent it doesn't that create a situation where you may have a change in circumstances, because the judge was contemplating that dad would be moving? So some of the concerns that you're raising could be raised in a modification potentially. But what is the current, I mean, they're going to share equal parenting time, so it seems like it ought to be labeled joint physical custody, and child support would be determined accordingly. And to the extent the mother's financial situation is impacted, that should be an alimony issue, shouldn't it?
Well, those things that I listed directly affect the children, so I don't think that's an alimony situation. I think that is specifically has to do with being able to access programs that are a benefit to the children.
And so you're saying that she cannot access those programs if there's a joint physical custody arrangement?
I don't think there's anything in the record to show that. I do think that it is significant in accessing those types of programs. But it also indicated that the mother is the one that had taken the initiative to do that, to look into things that were available for the children, both parents being on a very tight budget. And as far as your question, as far as the father moving to Fremont, I think that the judge did indicate concern that he said he would do a lot of things and he didn't. One was to move to Fremont and he didn't. One was to change his shift and he didn't. One was to hire a babysitter and he didn't. It's really, I think the evidence indicates that as far as his maturity goes and looking at the best interests of the children, that he really was dependent on his own parents. As far as communication by the parties, another element of best interests of the children, that they weren't there as far as making decisions. And I think that had to do lead to the judge ordering that the mother have the tiebreaker. I do, as far as the child support goes and having it recalculated on a joint custody, I think possibly would come out the same, but under a joint custody, it's my experience that generally the court will then order the parents to split significant costs for the child, such as activities, school expenses, clothing, things like that. The father was not ordered to pay those things in this particular case. He's not required to contribute to the cost of insurance. The mother is bearing that cost. And I would say on the issue of Medicaid and that ruling in this particular case, that the evidence showed that the child was still on Medicaid. So there was still a Medicaid benefit being paid by the state. And of course, the cash medical is the reimbursement for that. So I think that would justify the order as far as it goes with the Medicaid.
Ms. Andrews, was there any evidence with regard to Medicaid and cash medical support, or was that just comments by counsel?
My recollection is that the mother testified that the children were on Medicaid and that she was also providing health insurance for them.
but no evidence regarding the cash medical support, I assume.
Not other than the previous order for support.
And what is your position with respect to that in response to Ms. Bryant's arguments concerning the child support guidelines and the provisions for cash medical support?
Well, one, I would say that the cash medical is the least of my clients' argument here, but we would say that it is supported, one, by the evidence, two, that if there is something that needs to be changed, the state is a party to this, and they are the ones that should have brought it up, and they are the one that benefit from the cash medical being reimbursed to them.
They did not participate either at the trial below or in these proceedings on appeal, correct?
Correct. They were a party, and they did file, my recollection is, an answer, but did not actively participate in the trial, and of course not on appeal.
Do you take the position that the cash medical pay is part of the final order?
Yes.
And what is your theory by which it's part of the final order?
One, it was previously ordered, and two, it was not terminated. So I think, therefore, it is ongoing. It's the understanding as we go forward in this appeal that both parties have that same understanding. So that is where I'm coming up with that.
There's a provision in the final order that talks about the consistency with the prior order, and things that aren't inconsistent are incorporated. Do you agree with that?
I'm sorry, I didn't get your whole question.
Yeah, isn't there a provision in the final order that talks about adopting things that are not inconsistent in the final order with the previous order?
Well, I wouldn't say that the cash medical is inconsistent with the current order, because Medicaid continues, and because there was a determination regarding health insurance.
So in the prior order, did it not speak to there being no health insurance, and that was the basis upon which the court ordered it? However, in the final order, it talks about now we have health insurance. Does that make it inconsistent?
Well, I get your point, but I think that where it's not been specifically changed, it is not inconsistent with, that the current order is not consistent with the prior order. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We've taken you over time. Ms. Stewart, how much time did we take Ms. Andrews over?
1 minute and 2 seconds.
Would you please add that to the appellant's rebuttal?
Just briefly, Your Honors. There was a lot of discussion about all these expenses that Ms. Buckingham will now incur, and that the child support, I think, is the important part for her regarding the label. In the final order, there was an order regarding work-related daycare, that they were to split those in accordance with the child support percentages. Also, they were ordered to split the non-reimbursed medical expenses. So I think some of those issues that were raised at the trial court level were addressed. I'm not sure anywhere in the record that any other relief was sought by Ms. Buckingham.
Wouldn't you agree, Ms. Bryant, that if we were to agree with you that this is truly a joint physical custody arrangement, child support would have to be recalculated, and all of those various expenses Ms. Andrews was describing would become shared at that point?
I do agree that it would have to be recalculated, and I think the percentages for those would remain the same. The amount goes down, but I think those percentages that each party is responsible remain the same in that calculation. So all of those would still be incurred.
But there would be additional expenses. There's a number of other expenses that are contemplated by a joint physical custody arrangement that the parties would share proportionately.
Yes, Your Honor. So essentially, I think that the court showed that even though it's not the week on, week off, that the best interest of these children was to spend equal time with the parents. The label is just different. So we're asking the court to consider that label, modifying it, and then ordering the child support to return. And the cash medical, again, I still think that's a tricky one, but I don't think that the record shows that it is any longer necessary for payment of that cash medical support. Thank you.
Thank you both. Appreciate your arguments here today, appearance by WebEx video conferencing. We're appreciative that we have that technology that allows us to continue our operations during this unusual time. So thank you both. Your case is submitted and you are excused.
Thank you.